And today's conversation is going to be on the topic of God, design in nature, and stuff like that. So that's what I want to discuss. So give me a second and I will get to it. If you're on Facebook, try to come on YouTube because it's hard for me to keep track of both YouTube and Facebook questions, especially if you want to ask questions. So just come online on YouTube, on the YouTube channel. And that's funny, I just had a pizza as well, pepperoni pizza. So it's been what, like a couple of years now, and I'm eating pepperoni pizza. Yep, that's like pork pepperoni, like the type of haram pepperoni that you're not supposed to eat. It took me a long time to get used to eating pepperoni because it just bugs me. It's like, ugh, yucky pork. I had a friend on, let's call him a friend, on YouTube saying, "See, atheists have no morals. They'll eat anything. Look how disgusting you are." And he's like, "You can even eat like, you can even eat like, what did he say? Like bull penis and like bull testicles and this and that." And the funny thing is, my friend actually went and posted the link, my ex-Muslim friend. So that reminds me, going to be having a live conversation with ex-Muslim on Wednesday at the same time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So basically 35 minutes before this time, depending on what time it is locally for you. And he has a very similar story to me. So he also left Islam. He was very religious, and he is going to be joining me. Cheers to whoever's here. So I had my greetings, BJ. I had my pepperoni pizza, and it was good. It was actually pretty good. It was Pizza Hut. So normally I feel disgusted after eating pepperoni. I still kind of feel disgusted because it's pork. Ugh, right? But I did it. I had a couple times now. Yeah, that's the funny thing, right? It's apparently it's halal to eat like all that stuff anyway. So it's so silly when Muslims think that they can get one on you by saying that, "Oh, look, you have no morals, you can do whatever you want." Well, would you rather I go by Muhammad's arbitrary morals? Can't have pork, okay, but you can eat bull penis and everything else. Okay, well, what's so bad about eating pork, right? Like, it's just an animal, just like any other animal, right? If you don't do it because God said so, okay, that's your choice. But there's nothing inherently bad about pork, right? So that's the funny thing. So I was having some discussions with people about the idea about design in nature, intelligent design in nature, stuff like that. Like, you know, the existence of God. Does God exist? Does God not exist? And looking at nature and seeing that, well, if God doesn't exist, then why does it seem that like things are designed? You know, if you look at the eye, if you look at the body, if you look at, you know, nature, and we say that, well, it looks like we're designed, right? Now the question is, not only that, but you know, some theists will say that we were actually. They will say that this universe is fine-tuned to the existence of life. So universe is fine-tuned to existence of life. It's just a narrow range of life existing. And if it wasn't for that, then, you know, we wouldn't exist, and there wouldn't be any life, and, you know, there wouldn't be any God. And there wouldn't be any of that stuff. I'm sorry, there wouldn't be any God. So the other thing that comes up is people say, well, you have no morals because, or you have no basis for morality. You have no basis for right and wrong. You have no reason to say that, you know, this is right or this is wrong. You can't say anything about right and wrong anymore because you don't believe in God. You don't believe in Muhammad's personal God. So, you know, it'd be interesting to talk about some of these things, and this is what I wanted to introduce the topic. The topic is going to be about intelligent design, you know, the watchmaker argument for God, you know, How is it that life is perfectly tuned to exist, yet, I'm claiming there's no God, and many of us are claiming there's no God. So how does that happen? So let's take a look. Well, first of all, apparently, it seems like there's some flaws with some of this design. Like, anyone that wears glasses, these annoying things that, you have to put on your eyes to adjust for the fact that I can't, can't see properly. Eyes don't always work that well. Eyes are amazing. They're much better than any other camera or any other electronic equipment that we have. However, there are flaws in nature, and when we look at these, we wonder, like, did God intentionally? Well, there's a couple of ways we can look at it. One is, did God do this intentionally, right? So are we talking about a limited being, right? So let's take a look, right? One possibility, God has limited power, right? This is why we see flaws in the in nature. Two, God isn't perfectly benevolent, right? Benevolent. Meaning, even though we suffer, God doesn't care that we suffer. Even though God is omnipotent and has perfect, so all of these discussions are going to be based on the classical definition of God, who is omnipotent, who has, infinite power, can do whatever he wants. He doesn't lose a single thing to actually, give us, So the question is, if this is the definition of God, then why do we find ourselves in a world that has so much suffering? And first possibility, God has limited power. Okay? Second possibility, God isn't perfectly benevolent. Okay? So these are two possibilities. And the third possibility, this is the third possibility. Now, this is the one I believe is true. So I personally believe that this is the case, that the world isn't designed by God. If God was perfect and God was flawless, then why do we see these things in the world, right? So let's look at some examples, right? We'll look at some examples of things in nature that seem to be very strange, right? I'll give you an example. So I have some on my blog. Hold on, I'm just gonna open my blog here. Okay, here's an example. How is it that if we were actually designed by God, that there's certain things in our body which are actually quite terrible? For example, certain body parts are prone to cancer, like prostate glands and breasts. When it comes to the birth process, it seems like there's a lot of, there could be a lot of design improvements, let's say. For example, umbilical cords can choke babies, amniotic bands that occur inside the womb due to potential partial rupture of amniotic sac can dismember the fetus, like break up the fetus. Many babies get stuck in the birth canal and need medical intervention to save them. Like, for example, many years ago, my wife had an ectopic pregnancy. An ectopic pregnancy is basically the baby doesn't go into the right place. It starts growing inside the fallopian tube, right? And what happens is, if you don't remove it, it can rupture the tube and cause death. In fact, ectopic pregnancy is the most common cause of pregnancy-related deaths in the first trimester of pregnancy. There's more than 40 deaths per year in the United States alone. It accounts for about 10% of all pregnancy-related deaths. Okay? However, the number of deaths per ectopic pregnancy is decreasing dramatically because of earlier diagnosis and treatment. So it's quite interesting that because of human beings, because of science, we are actually saving babies from ectopic pregnancies. My own wife, for example, if you were born, I don't know, 1,000 years ago, she might have died. She might have died from that, right? I mean, it was an emergency. I had to call 911. She was in massive pain, and I called 911, and we went to the hospital in, I believe in an, I can't remember if it was in an ambulance or not. But anyways, when we got there, she was immediately seen to. because this is actually a crisis situation. This is a very dangerous situation, ectopic pregnancy. So they dealt with it right away. Basically they took out the baby, which was just a tiny, tiny little thing, probably smaller than a coin. Tiny little baby. Wasn't quite, just that small little thing could have actually killed her. So how is it that if this was actually intelligent design, this is, if God actually made humans like this, then why do we see these issues, right? Let's look at another issue. Have you ever noticed how big babies' heads are, right? Like babies' heads are actually kind of like too big, right? The way too big for the they're way too big to actually fit out of the vagina, right? To come out of the vagina. So many, many babies actually got stuck when they were trying to come out, right? And many people actually died from that. Many, many women died in childbirth, right? The first written record we have of a mother and baby surviving a C-section comes from Switzerland in 1500, when Sogelder Jacob Neuffer performed the operation on his wife after several days in labor and help from 13 midwives. The woman was unable to deliver the baby, so he basically saved the baby, saved the mom, because he cut her open and he took out the baby. So this is an example of how, again, we see flaws in nature. Now, going back to the possibilities, different possibilities, which one do you want to believe? God has unlimited power, isn't omnipotent, which contradicts the definition of God. So, right away I would say nope, that's not true. Second possibility, God isn't perfectly benevolent. And we can talk about that. I want to talk about that a little bit more. What I mean by that. What I mean when I say God isn't perfectly benevolent. What does that mean? Now, normally the definition when we talk about God, we say that God is perfectly just in all ways, right? So what does that mean? Like, it means that everything in this world is here for a reason, okay? It means that if there's any sort of suffering in this world, it's a necessary suffering. So God doesn't make anyone suffer for no reason. It's basically necessary suffering, right? If you can imagine God being omnipotent, can't say that word. It means that any decision, any choice, anything that God does is a zero cost decision, right? Like the Quran says, "Kun fiyakun," God says, "Be and it is," right? So basically, there's no cost involved for any decision to God, right? Now, if you look at it like this, that means in classical theism, because God is also just, God is all powerful, it means that everything that God does has to be for a good reason. So, let's think about this a little bit. If God can imagine a better world that doesn't include all of the suffering that we have, because we see a lot of suffering in the world. If you look at an improved world, a world that has less suffering, why would this be a problem? Well, theists would say, the world requires suffering for moral good. So they'll say that, without evil, there can be no good. So without suffering and pain, how would we know goodness, right? And how would we know happiness? So they would say that, well, actually, the reason for evil is because good can come about. So let's explore that a little bit more. Let's explore the idea of evil being necessary. Now the question is it possible for God to have a world that there would be, less suffering, yet the moral test of life would still be there? For example, Muslims say the whole purpose of life is a test. Well, this life is a test. The reason for suffering is because you'll be rewarded. Allah wants to see who is the best. Who will do the best deeds, eh? Excuse me, who will do the best deeds, who will do the most justice. And so this is the purpose of life, this is the test of life. So the question is, could God have made this world with less suffering and still tested us? Of course. I mean, when you look at the example of Shaitan or Iblis or the devil, he actually was tested, and he was tested in this metaphysical world of angels and devils, and you know, he was told bow down and he didn't bow down, and you know, that again begs the question of, like, you know, if you're an author in a book and you're writing the book and you write in the book that this is what's going to happen, and you give you make this devil that you know is going to disobey you, and then, like, how does it make sense to punish that same devil, right? It's just a story this too. Because they did not want to attribute evil to God, so it made sense to make, you know, the devil in order to come away from the excuse of God being evil. And we see this coming about, you know, just to kind of a little bit of a divergence. We see the idea of the devil coming about the most strongly as part of Messianic Judaism, meaning Christianity. When Christianity came, that's really the first time we see the devil becoming a big figure in the story. And it makes perfect sense that when the religion is evolving and, you know, things are changing, that's when, you know, the devil came about, because people started to ask questions. Well, if God is good, then where does evil come from, right? And one of the explanations for evil is the devil, right? The devil is a philosophical, you can say, metaphysical explanation for why there's evil in the world. So, you know, according to this idea, you know, Shaitan was tested without this in this metaphysical world where there's no suffering, yet he was tested. You know, God talks to angels, asks them questions, they answer questions. All of this happens in this imaginary world where there's no suffering, right? Yet there's no suffering yet. So the question is, how is it that God made the world where there's so much suffering and unnecessary suffering? It would be just like, if you can imagine a world where there was less suffering than this world, yet, you know, you could still test morality if you assume that testing morality makes sense, but let's just say it does. I don't think it does, but then, you know, if God can just imagine a better world, then all he has to do is just think it and it would be there, right? Yet what we find is we find a world full of suffering, full of, you know, disease, like Nim is saying, you know, his dad has Alzheimer's, or her dad has Alzheimer's, and, you know, all of these things to test us. But, like, at the end of the day, the question is, could we have been tested without all the suffering? And could we have still come up with, you know, and what does suffering tend to do? What does evil tend to do to people? When you find that, you know, terrible things happen to you in life, you know, God forbid, your parents die from cancer, or your child dies from leukemia, or someone gets hit by a bus, you know, someone that's beloved to you. How does this improve your morality? How does this improve your life? How does this make you a better person? How does this make you happy in any way? In fact, you know, in the worst of situations, let's say chaos, earthquakes, natural disasters, all these things, don't you find that, you know, these things actually ruin your life more than make your life better? Like, it's a very rare individual that could actually become a better person in these circumstances. The majority of people, if you put them on an island, let's say, and you made them fight for their lives, I rarely think they'd be, you know, showing better morality. It would become like what basically become a, what you can call a Hobbesian dynamic, where survival of the fittest, or, you know, basically what we read about in Lord of the Flies, which is one of the books you have to read here when you take English. In high school, everyone has to study Lord of the Flies. It's this island where these children, they start fighting, they start, you know, hurting each other, and they basically, it's like survival of the fittest, right? So this is kind of what happens, you know, when we get put into these bad situations, we don't end up as better people, we end up as worse people, right? So I'm seeing some questions about testing, people being tested. It could be a test of faith, and God being benevolent or not being benevolent. If it's truly the case that God wanted us all to suffer, and God wanted us all to go through this, like, again, the question is, what type of God is this, right? And do we truly believe that there is actually a God that designed everything in such a way that, you know, there's, like, if just to go back to a few more examples, right? I'm not even there. There's so many examples Like, for example, sickle cell disease. Sickle cell disease is another example of something kind of terrible in nature, where when you have both parents become immune to malaria due to, there's a lot of mosquitoes in the area, and then eventually they develop immunity to malaria over time. The child of two such parents tends to have sickle cell anemia because the two genes they don't go well together when from the mom and dad. When they go together, the child can't the child ends up with a low number of red blood cells and repeated infections and periodic episodes of pain. So what would be the reason for making a little child like that suffer, right? Like why would there need to be like what's the point of making a child like that suffering? Another example is the whole idea of animals having to eat meat. If you were a god and you were, a kind god, why would you make a world where animals have to eat meat, have to tear each other apart just to survive? Like, where's the benefit? Where's the moral benefit? Where's the benefit in that? Like, it just doesn't make any sense, right? If anything, it just shows like grotesque violence in nature. All of the violence in nature, right? Like some of the horrific mating rituals of, like, for example, the male bed bug sperm, how he stabs the female in the stomach, right? For example, seals that the males forcibly rape the baby cubs and sometimes even crush them to death, right? Like, male lions that come and they kill all of the cubs from the previous spot. Like, you see such terrible things in nature, and it just seems so unnecessary. Like, and then what happens to those animals? Like, where's the justice in that, right? Do the animals get some sort of justice as well? Like, what's the point of making all of those animals suffer? And that's a classic example of the response to theism is, excuse me, Bambi in the forest. When people say that, when humans suffer, there'll be justice and this and that. Well, what about a Bambi in the middle of a forest fire who burns to death? Like, we know examples like that of animals that just burn to death from lightning setting a forest on fire. And again, it just seems so pointless. It seems completely pointless. Like, what's the point of that animal dying like that? And instead, what we do see is the world seems to reflect the reality that there is no God, that it's just a closed natural system that has what it has, that we evolved in a certain way to with certain type of characteristics, that animals have to eat each other to survive. And of course, we don't have to, we don't have to act that way. We don't have to eat animals and stuff like that if you don't want to. But for God, if God had infinite power and he doesn't lose anything to give someone something, then what's the point of making people suffer like that, right? And yeah, there also seems to be incredible, I mean, doesn't seem to be, there's definitely incredible injustice in the world. We see certain people just getting away with murder, and this kind of makes people want to believe in God. They want to believe that there's some sort of eternal justice coming. And there's a big daddy in the sky that's going to take care of everything, right? But it just doesn't seem to be the case that anyone is going to actually come and fix all the problems, right? I
Take
mean,
care of
keep hoping
everything, right?
that there's going to be
But
someone
it just
coming and
doesn't
fixing
seem.
everything. But frankly speaking, I mean, that's just not going to happen, right? Like, when we pray, does anyone answer prayers? And one way we can look at this is there was a Harvard prayer study where they tried to actually, make a study of prayer to see does it actually work. The best we can do, the same way we test the world to see how it works using science, we do a test. They tried, let's do this to the prayer. And what they found was, lo and behold, there was no actual effect of prayer. They didn't find any effect of prayer hold on. They didn't find any effect of prayer whatsoever, which was basically prayer doesn't work. So, theists will say, well, maybe they didn't test it properly, right? Maybe they need to do it differently. Maybe God didn't want to answer those prayers, right? But like, how can we test this? How can we find out, does prayer actually work? Is there a way to test this? And the question, and this is the only way the only way we can actually test it is to try this experiment where people pray for each other. and they control it and they try to see does there any effect of prayer times, right? And we didn't see any effects, right? So that's the thing, right? It just doesn't seem to have any effect, right? Now, if there was a benevolent God, he put us in this bad situation, so he doesn't seem to be benevolent. Seems there's a lot of, terrible things in nature. That's the other issue. It seems like, nobody's answering our prayers, right? So where are we left actually, right? Where are we left exactly? I don't know. I think we're left in a situation that we're all alone in the world. We're all alone. There's nobody here to answer our prayers. Nobody designed us in this way. We see a lot of suffering in the world. Even humans, right? The way humans are, we have a tendency to be like territorial. We have a tendency to be violent at times. We have a tendency to be, like just look at the dictators in the world, right? Like, why would God make humans with such nasty tendencies, right? I mean, to me, it looks like we're just evolved primates, evolved apes, right? Excuse me, just a few genes away from a chimp, basically, right? So if that's the case, then that would explain why there's so much suffering in the world, even from humans, right? It's like God gave a gun to a bunch of little kids, and then he's gonna blame them for shooting each other, right? So that's a bizarre thing. I'm just gonna take a break and gonna answer some of the questions. Can God create a rock which he can't lift? Gilberto, I don't think this is a logical question. I think this is an incoherent question. Can God create a rock which he can't lift? Because it actually, by definition, it's contradicting itself. It's kind of like saying, can God make a square circle? Can he make a circle triangle? It by definition of a square has four sides. By definition of a circle has no sides. It's a perfect circle. So, it's a nonsensical argument. It doesn't disprove God in any way because you're actually contradicting the definition, right? Which is God can do anything that's logically possible, right? It's according to a definition of God. So that doesn't really make sense. That's not a good question. Now, okay. Why do I have a Rihal in the background? Is that this Quran thing over here? Yeah, it's just been there for a long time. Okay. Prayer presumes you can change God's mind simply by nagging at him. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, changing God's mind or, kind of changing your destiny, it's kind of a contradiction in a sense, right? Because you're presuming God already decided what's going to happen to everybody, yet at the same time, you can change what happens by doing something differently, by saying, hey, God, help me out, right? Someone made a joke. It's a vulgar joke. I don't know if I should say it. Basically, he said if prayer actually worked, no man would have a thing less than 8 inches. You know what he's talking about. I won't explain it. If you don't get it, just never mind. Someone's asking me, am I going to be on the Gin and Tonic show? I can try. It's difficult. Friday afternoon, I'm working, so I can't usually get to there. Can God make gods? That's a good question. I guess in a sense, it depends on your definition of God. If you define God as being the only necessary absolute primordial being, then no, God cannot make other gods. But can God make lesser gods? Like angels, you can think of angels as lesser gods, I guess, in a sense. They have some sort of superpowers. Yeah. Someone's asking, how should he tell his parents that he doesn't want to be Muslim? On atheism Reddit, they actually recommend that you don't tell your parents until you're economically stable. And this is not even about ex-Muslims. This is just like even Christians telling their parents, right? They recommend don't tell your parents until you're able to live on your own, until you're able to support yourself, until it depends on your situation, what country you're in, what your relationship is with your parents, all that stuff. It's a very difficult question to answer because everyone's parents, everyone's situation is different. So I can't give you very good advice on that, but just be careful, and in general, just be, just recommend, I just recommend just wait until you can get out of the situation if it's a dangerous situation, or even if it's not a dangerous situation, if you don't want to ruin the relationship. I do recommend people come out and tell their families, but like do it when you're in power so you don't get kicked out or something, or have to like suffers for, like, you know, I know one guy that he had to go for like jinn possession exorcism and stuff, and he found it very psychologically abusive how they were like, you know, shouting at him and reading Quran on him and stuff like that. So just bear in mind what the consequences are of telling your parents, and then decide for yourself. Anthony's saying, I can't believe it's 2017 and billions of people still believe in fantasy books using today's technology to look at the universe for answers, not 1400 or 2000-year-old books, which are trying to explain the world how it originated in ancient times. Yeah, I agree with you. Wake up, people. And that's what we're trying to do here. Like, we're trying to help people to see that these 1400-year-old books are not true. They don't have actual any sort of useful knowledge or revelations in them, but rather they're just. Yeah, so Sajan is saying on Facebook, maybe God doesn't interfere with daily activities. I guess that's a possibility, but, and then what you would call that is basically deism, right? Deism means that there's a God and he doesn't get involved in any way, and he doesn't, you know, intercede, he doesn't answer prayers. And that's a possibility, depending on your definition of what God is, right? If does God have a consciousness? Does he know we exist? Does he know we exist? Is he a power? Is he a force? Is he an entity like us? And you know, let's get into the topic of, you know, morality slash, you know, is do you have to believe in God to be moral? Do you have to believe in God? Now, here's a question for you. If God doesn't exist, does that mean that, you know, someone asked in the chat too, are we all stardust? I think we are stardust. I think we're just the, you know, basically the whole entire earth and all the water on earth and all the greenery, it started with an exploding star, right? An exploding star, you know, shot out material all over the universe, and eventually it gathered and clumped and became, you know, planets, right? And the planet that had the possibility for life to come about, the type of life that we have, carbon-based life, is where we found ourselves, right? So we woke up one day and we're like alive here and, you know, on this world, and we're like, wow, this was all designed for us. But you know, at the end of the day, was it designed for us, or did we just, you know, crawl into a place that life started because the environment was correct for life to start? And the universe is billions of years old, and there's tens of billions of stars in the universe and planets, and so, you know, the possibility is that in billions of years and billions of planets, life came about on its own. It's a possibility, right? If you want to believe some sort of God did it, you know, is the universe fine-tuned for life? Is life, do we find life all over the universe? Well, if universe is fine-tuned for life, I would say the universe is actually more fine-tuned for bacteria life, because what we find is a bacteria life is a type of life that seems to be able to survive, not human life and not animal life. Like, we're just barely surviving, you know, on this little planet. One day there might be like a huge earthquake and we're all dead. Or there could be a tsunami and we're all dead. Or there could be like a bacteria that comes and just wipes us all out, right? So, like, honestly speaking, if anything's gonna survive, it's gonna be bacteria. If the next nuclear explosion comes and wipes us all out, it's gonna be like the only one left is the bacteria. They're the last man standing. So, how is this universe fine-tuned for life? It seems like it's fine-tuned for bacteria, if anything. And how is it that in billions of bacteria thrives in politics, Tim said. How is it that in billions of years and in billions of planets, the only place we found life is where we are? Is the universe really fine-tuned for life? Doesn't seem like it's very fine-tuned. Now, as for morality, the question is, if there's no God, or let's say I don't believe in God, does that mean I have no basis for morality? Well, let's ask a question. What makes right and wrong? How do we determine what's right? Back to the lives matter, Tim is saying. How do we determine right and wrong? If one way is we look at what's called divine command theory. So basically, what God says is right and what God says is wrong is wrong. But let's ask a question. What if God said something to you like slavery is okay, like you should kill every second child that's born, you know, you should kill all children that are disabled, whatever, like come up with something. Every fifth child that's born, as Sam Harris mentions as an example in his book on the moral landscape, would this be a moral thing to do? Can we say this is a good God, this is a just God that said such a thing just because God said it? Ask yourself that question. The answer is no. It doesn't make it right just because God said it. Even if God said it, it's still wrong because we know, like, we know this is wrong. And so, you know, there's a 2400-year-old explanation for this, and it's called Euthyphro's Dilemma. Euthyphro's Dilemma basically explains that is something right and wrong because God said it, or is it right and wrong because it's right and wrong? And through this argument, Euthyphro is able to prove that right and wrong exist independently of God. And this is where secular morality comes from as well, right? We can see things in the religion that had some sort of basis in morality, and we can see a lot of terrible things in the religion that have no basis in the world today. And so we want to get rid of them, right? We definitely want to, we don't want to be following these things like, beating your wife is okay, like, stuff like that, right? And it's not like ethics and morality is an easy question. It's a struggle. We struggle to figure out what's right and what's wrong, and how do we do it? Well, one way is to look at consequences, right? In a world of rocks and trees without any consciousness, there would be no reason for morality. Because we have consciousness, because we can suffer and we can experience pleasure and pain, consequences matter. So if an action has a good consequence, then we can consider it good. If it has a bad consequence and it doesn't help for human thriving, then we can consider it bad. Why human thriving, right? Well, because that's my subjective choice. Secular humanism is based on a subjective choice that human lives matter. And if we say that human lives matter, we can actually make our decisions, to help human life, right? So, so basically, if evolution continues, Kalo is saying that we may become similar to gods, have evolved supernatural powers. Well, it seems like, never mind evolution, it seems like the fact that we have brains, we are able to do things much faster than evolution can do. Evolution, occurs very slowly, and it's very, very gradual change, right? Whereas with our brains, I mean, just look at dogs. We've evolved dogs using artificial selection into every single possible variety that you can imagine, from small dogs to short dogs, right? Like, it's just like there's so many dog varieties, and all of these dogs, where do they come from? They come from humans, right? It's just like we actually made the dogs into the greatest, varied species, basically, on Earth, right? Like, just take a look. Just take a look at all of these dogs. And this was done by humans. If we did this with, like, if humans had this much variety, we would have, gigantic, like, humans and, like, tiny humans. We'd have, like, just look at it. Like, look at the list, right? Humans did this using artificial selection and by breeding for favored characteristics. So, basically breeding for a strong sense of smell, or for playfulness, or for loyalty, or for, speed of catching, whatever it is that basically you want in a dog. This is what dog breeders will breed for, right? And like, if you just look at this dog, right? Like, there's like all around friendliness, 5 stars, health grooming, 5 stars. You don't like you do tendency to bark is pretty low, which is great. Like, it's just like whatever you need, right? Whatever you're looking for, I mean, you can find that in a dog. And that's artificial selection, never mind natural selection, right? So that's one example of humans doing evolution, not like, by hand, basically, right? Tim wants to breed a dog that can make him coffee. Well, you can make a robot that'll make you coffee. That's coming, right? Japanese are working on robots, and so we might have robots soon that can make you coffee. If suffering is bad, why do we make animals suffer and eat them? Zarif Hussein is asking. That's actually a very good question. Why do we eat animals? I struggle with this as well. I believe we should try not to eat animals as much as possible. We should reduce animal suffering. We should reduce, unnecessary animal suffering. So me personally, when I buy eggs, for example, I buy organic eggs which are free range. So what that means is, they let the chickens walk around. They don't cut off the beaks with the laser hot machine or whatever. Because they put them in tiny little coops where they can't even walk and they peck each other to death. So they cut off their beaks, which is actually, very painful, right? And they kill all the male chicks, right? So because the female chicks go into the chick give you the nice fat chicken breasts and all that stuff that we like, right? Chicken wings. And so there's definitely issues, I think there's ethical issues with eating meat. So I think it's better to eat less meat. It's better for the environment to eat less meat. It's better for everybody. So try to eat less meat. You know, if you want to become vegan, I don't know about that, but we do have like the carnivorous teeth, and we do have the body to eat meat, right? So we are omnivores by nature. I do think that, and I hope that, you know, as time goes by, we'll have more choices for ethical meat, like lab meat. They're working on making steak in a lab. There's a hamburger that they invented that's like, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, so basically, lab-grown meat is coming very soon, and to a theater near you. Not to a theater, it's coming to a grocery store near you. Here it is, right? So this is interesting. Like, when it first came about, it was $330,000 for one, but now it's getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and yeah, like it's grown in a lab, so there's no animal suffering. Excuse me, it tastes just as good. Who knows? Like, it might be actually quite fantastic. So let's see how that goes, right? I'm looking forward to that, right? Saqib is asking me what prompted me to come out in public as an ex-Muslim rather than keeping to myself. And that basically is, I wanted to help other people to find out that the religion is not true. And I went through, you know, I made a lot of sacrifice in my life, personal sacrifice for Islam. And it's all for nothing. If Islam is not true, it's all for nothing, right? And so my personal situation is one that I can actually afford to come out without major harm to myself or my family. So because I have that ability, my personality is that type of personality, I decided that I gotta do this, right? And I also was responsible for, you know, misguiding, or I don't know what you wanna call it, guiding people to Islam. Many, many, many people benefited. You know, more than 4 million people downloaded from lightuponlight.com. You know, thousands and thousands of people are still using verse by verse Quran.com. So I felt like, you know, I contributed to the problem of spreading Islam, and Islam is not true. So I want people to know it's not true, right? That's why I came out. Yeah, I believe the universe is infinite or finite. There's no such thing as, as far as I know, there's no such thing as infinite in the real world. The universe is finite. The universe is actually expanding. The universe is expanding. It's finite. But what happens when you reach the edge of the universe, right? It's like, is it like a flat earth? Like you just fall off? Ah! What happens when you reach the edge of the universe? Anyone know? Einstein actually solved this problem. Einstein solved this problem. When you reach the edge of the universe, you start back at the beginning again. That's because space-time curves on itself. It's like a ball. It's like two balls stuck together. I don't know. I forget what it's called. There's a name for it. Basically, the universe is expanding, but like you can never reach the edge of the universe because it starts back on itself. If you keep traveling in the universe, you'll eventually start back where you left, which is pretty crazy, right? The universe is crazy. Like when you start studying physics and metaphysics, blows your mind. It's like crazy stuff, right? Tim, you're hilarious. There's a bar at the end of the universe. It's like, stop. You've reached the edge of the earth, the edge of the universe. You may proceed no further, right? It's pretty funny. Is the multiverse infinite? The whole idea of a multiverse is very theoretical. We don't even know if there's a multiverse. We don't know if this universe is just going in an infinite cycle of expanding and collapsing. We don't know if there is a multiverse. There's no way to answer that question, right? We're limited to the little pond that we live in. We don't know what's outside that pond, and how would we ever know, right? Yeah. Why the Quran and Muslims have tendency to highlight only harmonious things in nature, Yeah, that's a good sales pitch they use, right? Like they love to go on about how the universe is so perfect and beautiful and life is so amazing and humans are so amazing, everything's so amazing. Therefore, Allah exists. Therefore, Muhammad spoke to Archangel Gabriel in the cave, and therefore Allah is real, and you have to listen to Muhammad, and you have to listen to Quran, and you have to live your life according to Islam. Whoa, hold on a second. Step back, step back. How did you get from there's a God to Muhammad ibn Abdullah is a messenger of God and he spoke to Allah and this and this and this and this and this. There's a huge jump in between, right? So yeah, that's a sales pitch of most Muslims. They don't want to admit that there's a possibility there is a God, but this God never sent revelation. They just assume there must be a religion, there must be a revelation from God, which is absolutely false. If there is a God, maybe there's a God. Does that mean religion is true? No, religion may be completely false. It could be every single religion may be false. Maybe God is gonna wait and see on the day of judgment. I don't think there's a day of judgment. I'm just saying. Maybe if there's a God, he's gonna say, "You guys failed the test. Every single one of you religious followers, you all went for false religions. Every single religion was false, and none of them was true, and yet you went without evidence just because who said one of them has to be true? Who said there has to be a purpose? Who said there has to be a meaning to life, right? You don't presume these things, right? Why did the Big Bang happen? The Big Bang is a form, was in a state which was unstable, right? It was an unstable point. I'm not saying I'm gonna punch you, I'm just saying it's an unstable point. And so it went to its stability, which is, you know, exploding. Exploding even is a long word for it, but that's what I understand. There was no time before the Big Bang, so it's one of those things which is at the theoretical edges of our existence, theoretical edges of our understanding of the world. So it's a very difficult question. I'll probably need to study that a little bit more there. Saqib is saying, I think we need an evolved notion of God that's not stuck in the more primitive Abrahamic mode. Very much so. My friend Farhan Qureshi, he has some good topics on spirituality and God and all that. So if people want to explore that idea of God, pantheism, you know, consciousness inside everything, I mean, by all means, go for it. I'm not convinced totally there is a God. I'm just gonna ignore that question about, okay, fine. How do we know the Earth is not flat? Because you know, the best way to answer that question, right? Earth. How do I say it? How do I look this up? Hold on. It's not history of Earth. Basically, it's the history of. Okay, here we go. Hold on. I'll find this. There's actually. Oh, found it. What I was looking for. The best way to explain, I think, why we know the Earth is not flat, is to look at how humanity over the last several thousand years has figured this out. And it's quite beautiful if you look at how humans, early humans, you know, they came up with the most clever ways of, you know, investigating and researching and coming up with understanding of the world. And so if you look at, for example, Pythagoras, Plato, Aristotle, I mean, these are like 2,500 years ago. And then you continue to see how humanity over time, you know, continue to do tests. You know, for example, when a ship is at a horizon, you can't see the bottom of it because the Earth is not flat. If the Earth was flat, you'd be able to see the full thing, right? And so, you know, basically Ptolemy is another famous astronomer, scientist that you know, cosmologist, whatever, that taught these things about the fact that the Earth is not in the center of the galaxy and the sun is. So it's honestly beautiful just to look, just study the history of humanity. You know, forget this whole NASA nonsense, NASA conspiracies and all that. Look at the history of humanity and look how they figured out these things. And you'll understand that there's science. It's not just science, it's math. It's there's so much evidence that the Earth is not round. The Earth is round. That we don't live on a flat Earth. I mean, just forget the cameras, just forget all that, right? Just look at the history of humanity and you'll see that, you know, the Earth has to be round. It's just, there's a sphere. There's just no way around it, right? It's just, And I apologize to people that are at work. This seems to be the only time I have when kids are, off to bed, because the rest of the day I'm busy with them. So I'm sorry I have to do it at this time. Thank you, John Smith. Do I believe in NWO conspiracies and Illuminati? Nah, I don't know about that stuff. I think it's the way I look at it, and this is what I've heard from someone else. I don't remember who it was. The more assumptions your worldview requires you to make, the more likely it is false. The more you have to assume, the more you have to kind of use to hold together, the more likely that your point of view is just false. And a more coherent, worldview would have less assumptions you'd have to make. So I and plus honestly, this like conspiracy, like this Illuminati, whatever, it doesn't affect me in any way. I can't do anything about it, even if it's true. So I do the best I can in the world that I live. There's no need to basically, basically worry about that, right? If you were to go in one direction around the world after a while, you would find yourself where you started. Yeah, exactly. Even the Earth thing. How about Jesus's virgin birth? It's mentioned in the Quran and Bible. The virgin birth of Jesus was not mentioned in the earliest in the earliest books of the New Testament, and it was only mentioned, in the later book. I think Matthew, was it Matthew? Hold on. So let me just, yeah, I found it. So the virgin birth was not found in Mark, but found later on in Matthew and Luke, right? When we look at the four Gospels in order, Mark is the first one, and then Matthew and Luke, and then John is the last one. You can see like a clear progression of the story of Jesus becoming more and he becomes divine earlier and earlier and earlier. Starting with Mark, which is the oldest gospel. He's basically God when he dies. Then it goes back in Matthew and Luke. Now suddenly it's like virgin birth. Then you go a little bit to the newest version, John. Now he's God from the beginning. He's with God. John 3:16. Father and me are one. Sorry, I don't remember the quote. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. But basically, you can see the natural progression of Jesus. It's called early Christology versus late Christology. I highly recommend Bart Ehrman. Let me just show you his video and his book. I absolutely love it. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's worth reading and studying. How Jesus Became God, and this is a fantastic book. He also has a video series, three-part video series. Highly recommended. Highly enjoyable video series, almost as good as a book. I just started reading the book, but I highly recommend the video series. Yeah, there's no such thing as virgin birth. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because it doesn't make sense. Is consensual incest wrong? Okay, I have an answer for that too. I'll find it for you. So, I've just only started studying ethics, and one person who's actually tackled this topic is Peter Singer, and he's discussed how, when it comes to incest, well, first of all, nobody's really interested in incest. It's just like, when you grow up together, it's like you become naturally desexualized from your sister or your mother or whatever, and it's only like some kind of people, weird people that have like some sort of personality issues or psychological issues that would want that, but in general, there is sometimes it happens. It's happened that brother and sister, maybe half brothers, half siblings, maybe not. They grow up, apart from each other, and they fall in love. Believe it or not, it happens. There's what, like 7 billion, 8 billion people in the world now, something like that. So it happens sometimes, and it turns out, like, let's say there's no issue with, like having kids that are deformed because they're past the age of having kids, it should be illegal, right? And this guy, Peter Singer, is an ethicist, utilitarian ethicist. He actually says that there's no reason to make it illegal because what's the harm in it, right? Like, who's being hurt in this relationship? Both of them are consenting to do it. There's no clear harm being done to anybody, right? So, like I said, and like I said earlier, it comes down to harm and benefit. So, if there's some sort of harm, like slavery, there's clearly harm in slavery, owning people, then we don't do it. But like, if it's something like this, where first of all, it never happens because naturally you just don't you don't have that desire because it's come through evolution through thousands of years that this sort of like feeling is not adaptive because if you do it there's genetic issues and people are born sick and so therefore people don't do it because they don't want to do it because there's this natural thing not to do it, right? So but in the rare case that it happens, he's arguing that at least with siblings it shouldn't be illegal. He argues that for parent and child there's a power dynamic issue and there's excuse me like protecting the family and likelihood for abuse, kind of like a slave and or like a boss and his secretary or something. Cases like that, they're troubling. We have to discuss them ethically. There's some power imbalance, right? So it could be wrong, right, in those cases. But in the case of this case, he argues that it's not a big deal, because like again, it doesn't happen very often. It's natural, and all that stuff, right? Age of Ice, is the soul the same as DNA? No, the soul is a metaphysical concept of something that's inside us or connected to us in a way that has nothing to do with our physical body. Well, it's somehow connected to us, kind of like a mind. Like we think of this idea of having a mind. So the soul is like a concept of a mind, that it's you. But like, what happens when you have an accident, when you get brain damage, right? You have a concussion. People come and they end up totally different, right? Like there's a famous example of a guy. Let me find it. Oh yeah, I found it. This dude. Let me show you. Let me show you this guy. There's this famous dude. Hold on, I'm just loading it up on the screen. Who was basically, he got this thing right through his skull, this big ass rod, right through his brain. They don't have a picture of it here. Right in the middle of his brain, and he survived. He survived the incident, but it completely changed his personality. He became a totally different person. So like, if it's not connected to your personality. And if people get Alzheimer's and they forget the children and they forget the personality and they forget where they are, if people's personality keeps changing, then what's the soul? Like, what is it, right? If I have brain damage and I even completely forget who I am, is it still my soul still the same? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a metaphysical concept, which, to be honest, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's sort of like this collection of good deeds that you do and it collects good deeds and bad deeds. But, like, yeah, realistically speaking, it makes no sense. So, I would just forget about the idea there. Thank you to BJ for continuing to moderate. Thanks for keeping that up. So I can't really read all the comments as fast as they're coming, right? I appreciate the help. What do I think about Muslims that don't believe in terrorist attacks? Oh my God, as they think the attacks are false flags or hoaxes. I feel sad when I hear that. It just makes me so sad. It makes me so sad that people like it makes sense that people think that way, that they want to believe that this is false, this was made up by the enemies of Allah or Islam to defame Islam, to make Islam look bad. It makes sense they want to think that, but it's irrational. It's completely irrational. I don't know, do they not know Muslims? Like, have they never talked to Muslims and heard how they speak about, some of them about the West and about, like, how they hate the West and, like, how they'll die for Allah and this and that? Like, seriously, like, yes, majority of Muslims probably wouldn't go and do terrorist attacks, but to say that none of them would? I mean, people used to sympathize with Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. I remember some people, a Moroccan guy, a Muslim guy, was sympathizing with him and saying he's a good guy and Saddam's a good guy and this and that. Like, it's sad when people want to believe in these conspiracies because it's just diluted, right? Like, it's sad. I feel sad, right? So, Why do Muslims get more offended when people badmouth Muhammad? When people badmouth Allah, they don't care. That's a good point. Yeah, it's like Muhammad set himself up to become this kind of cultish leader that can never be criticized. He killed people that criticized him. He assassinated poets that insulted him. He told people they have to love him more than they love their own selves, more than they love their children, more than they love the kids and their parents and even their own selves. Like, you have to love Muhammad more than your own self. He set himself up to be this personality cult leader, right? Cultish type leader. So I think that's why people get more offended when Muhammad is insulted, right? They see him more personally, I guess, than yeah. Sorry, did I miss someone's question? I'm just trying to see. If I actually missed your question, you just post it again. I'm sorry. Anyone that's in the chat and I missed your question, just post it again, because the comments go way too fast for me to keep up with. And when I'm talking, if I start reading the comments, then I kind of can't pay attention to what I'm saying and I forget what I'm saying. Max is saying, is your main argument is against Islam that the Quran does not reflect the world in an accurate way, and it takes huge interpretation and retranslation to reconcile it? Yeah, that's a big part of it. The big part of it is that the Quran seems to reflect the words of a man, and there's no good reason to believe in Islam. There's no good reason to believe it's the word of God. There's no good reason to believe that Muhammad Ibn Abdullah spoke to some entity outside him, you know, other than what's in his mind. And so I don't believe in Islam. I don't think that the burden of proof has been met, right? Okay. Kayla was saying a virgin birth derives from a misunderstanding of Isaiah, where virgin means a young girl. Yeah, that's very possible there. I think I did answer the question. Okay, it looks like I didn't answer. I didn't miss the question. That's good. How do my parents feel about how Saudi Arabia is treating Muslims? My dad died, and I don't think he likes Saudi. And my mom, I don't know, she doesn't think about Saudi too much, to be honest. I don't know. Like, what do you mean? Did Muhammad rape? Chowdhury is saying. In a sense, let's look at it like this. There was no concept of consent back then. Like, having a slave and sleeping with your slave, there's no consent. You have ultimate control and power over your slave. There's no concept of consent over there. There's no question of consent. So rape happens, right? Like, in Islam, let's look at another thing, like, which kind of troubles me. Like, if it's true that Muhammad married a 6-year-old child and you know, slept with her when she was 9, how would she consent to that? How can a child consent to sex? So that's kind of like, you know, I don't want to say it, but there's no consent, right, when it comes to a 6-year-old or a 9-year-old. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's terrible about how Saudi Arabia is treating, you know, bombing Yemen, and they're such hypocrites, right? They're so-called custodians of the holy mosque, right? I mean, that's so ridiculous, right? Were the original human beings hermaphroditic before the genders split? I'm not aware of that. I don't think so. I think since we're mammals and we came from earlier mammals, those earlier mammals were also mixed genders. Some families treated the slaves better than others. It depended on people, the families. We know that some slaves were treated like family and others as servants. Yeah, but the whole idea of owning somebody, it just seems wrong, right? It doesn't make sense. Like, you know, you're born a slave, your children will be born slaves, their children will be born slaves. It's just a cycle of slavery, and you know, you have no freedom. You're owned, you're gonna be sold. If you live in Muhammad's time, you can be slept with, and then you can be sold to some other man who will sleep with you, and then you can be sold to another man who will sleep with you. It just, you know, you can't justify, you know, good treatment as a justification of slavery. Muhammad should be judged by standards of his time, not by others. Yeah, that's true in a sense, but Muhammad is also known as a perfect man for all of humanity. So yeah, as a historian, as a non-Muslim, yeah, I would say, you know, judge him by his time, which makes sense. He fits well in his time. But judging him as a perfect moral character for all of humanity, no way. Absolutely not. Doesn't make sense, eh? Opinion on the Israel-Palestine conflict. I don't really want to get into that. I think both sides have to learn from each other and have to find a way to coexist, right? I think that's what needs to be done. I think both sides are doing bad. Max is asking, why do intelligent people like Hamza Sotis, Yasir Qadhi act not leave Islam? Yeah, they know there's no scientific miracles and they know that, but I think, you know, it comes down to courage. You know, courage and, you know, your position. Like, for scholars and speakers and da'is, it's much more difficult for them to leave Islam because their position is on the line, their life is on the line, their situation, the whole entire life is built on Islam. So it's much more difficult for them. And the jobs, the money they get, you know, teaching and whatever. Yasir Qadhi is a president of Al Maghrib, or the principal, and he gets money for teaching as well, Islamic classes, and, you know, developing curriculum and all that stuff. And he's memorized the Quran, and I think his kids are memorizing the Quran, and he teaches at Memphis Islamic Center, and he would lose a lot if he left Islam, right? But let's say, putting that aside, let's say he had the courage to leave Islam despite all that would happen to him. Well, does he have the courage to face the fact that we're all alone in this world? Does he have the courage to face the fact that there's no day of judgment and there's no ultimate justice and there's no heaven and hell? Does he have the courage to know that when we die, that just might be the end of everything? Many people don't have that courage to face the reality that there is no, you know, there's no day of judgment, any of that stuff. And, you know, either, you know, we may just die and that might just be the end of it, right? And hey, Keith. Chadwick, nice to see you on here, my friend from Facebook. Adam and Eve would be doing incest. Yeah, that's how some Muslims explain Adam and Eve. They say that he had like twins. Sorry, they had twins, and like one of them of each brother and sister did it, and then, you know, something like that. It doesn't make any sense. It makes no genetic sense. You know, we've studied the genome, the human genome. We've decoded the human genome, and we can see there was no common man and there was no common dad and mom for all of humans, right? So Adam and Eve is a debunked theory. Okay, Muhammad didn't want to be known as a perfect man. He didn't want to be idolized. No, that's from the hadith. So if the hadith is from Muhammad, Muhammad himself said, you know, the Quran says, you know, you are ala khuluqin azim, like, you know, you are on an exalted standard, right? Like, you are basically, you're the best, right? So I don't see how this is from this is not from, I'm pretty sure this is actually from Muhammad's own mouth, that you are, you know, an exalted standard of character. You know, if you love Allah, there's another verse that, you know, if you love Allah, then follow me and Allah will love you and forgive sins. Right, there's another verse that says he doesn't speak from his own desires, right? Like, it's just, it goes on and on, right? So I don't buy that he didn't want to be idolized. I feel like he did want to be idolized. If you present a tape recorder with a recorded voice to a primitive population, will they react as will they think that, you know, we're God, basically we're gods or something, right? That's actually a very good question, right? And actually I have an answer for that. And I just want to show you about the concept of cargo cults. So cargo cults are basically these tribes that, you know, when they saw these guys, they saw an airplane and they decided to make a god out of it, right? So this is how humans are. We do these things, right? So just imagine, like, here's a question. If God wanted to come and prove that he existed, how would he do it? Because let's say some advanced alien exists in the world. And he came and plopped down right in front of your living room. And he said, I'm God. And you'd be like, oh, scary. And you're like, okay, how do I know you're God? He's like, tomorrow you will see a thunderstorm, right? And you're like, oh my God. And you're waiting for the day. Tomorrow comes there's a thunderstorm, right? And he's like, he just checked the weather app on his like iPhone. Yep, tomorrow there's like storm clouds coming. There's like 50% chance of rain. Yep, thunderstorms. Okay. Tell him his thunderstorm's coming. But like, and he's, you know, he's talking on his like iPhone, like iPod or whatever, right? It's like, tomorrow there'll be thunderstorms, and, you know, and it's like, yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, humans, we tend to fall for things like that. So how do we really know if God was really true, right? Like, just having some sort of miracles like that doesn't prove anything in a sense, right? And there's a cargo cult. So yeah. just see the next questions. Yeah, I feel sorry for these guys too, living the life for something that's not true, right? Like Yasukadi, and I have some hope for Yasukadi. Maybe he'll leave Islam one day. Hajj is ongoing right now? No, Hajj is, I mean, Umrah is going around all year, but I think Hajj is in like, isn't it like October or something? Wait, what is asking? Abdullah, why is alcohol forbidden in Islam if Muslims can drink as much as they want in heaven? I heard the story is that Ali, now you have to verify this for yourself, Ali got drunk. He was having some fine drinks, and he got drunk, and he started making fun of the Quran in a prayer. So Muhammad decided to just ban alcohol altogether. There's some harms in alcohol, and there's some benefits. Alcohol is a relaxant, and it's a depressant, so it slows you down. But you know, in excess, it's dangerous, right? It can hurt you. So I guess he decided that it was hurting his message to have drunk Muslims messing up the Quran recitation. Possibly. That's yeah. And yeah, he's like, Noma PC is saying Muhammad did a lot of other things that, like, you know, he never stopped people from collecting his sweat. His aunt used to collect his sweat when he was sleeping. They used to collect the wudu water and they would drink it and stuff. Or no, they would, sorry, they would put on their bodies and like all sorts of weird stuff, right? Yeah. Okay. Do I believe in soulmates? I think if you want to talk about this, I can say something about this. I think that there's a book, sorry, article on this topic called Why You'll Marry the Wrong Person in the New York Times, and there's a video on it by Alain de Botton. He goes to some high-level reasons how about this topic. I've actually read a lot of books on this, and one of the great books I really enjoyed was The Truth by Neil Strauss, and I really enjoyed that book. So, oh, where is it? Not this one. Not none of these. Oh, wow, that's a popular name, The Truth, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah, this book is quite fantastic. He talks about how we tend to go for, and that's what he talks about in that Why You'll Marry the Wrong Person. He summarizes it. It's a very short video you can watch. The idea is that we go for people that are familiar rather than people that are good for us. And you know, even if you come from a troubled family, you tend to go and do the same. You tend to fall for the same type of person that maybe represents your dysfunctional family member. Or maybe your dysfunctional family member, like your dad, let's say your dad was never home. So you'll go and marry someone that's like never home, right? Or maybe you'll do the opposite and you'll become like super needy or something, right? Like, so that's kind of the situation. You know, you can actually. So I really like this book. I highly recommend it. And I recommend everyone to check it out. Sorry, I needed to. Okay, so yeah, The Truth or Why You'll Marry the Wrong Person. I think this kind of gets into the topic a bit. So check that out. Okay. Okay. Alrighty. Do plants and animals have consciousness or souls? I think all, I don't know about plants, but you know, all like animals have some form of consciousness or other. Like, you know, elephants seem to have consciousness. Dolphins seem to be more intelligent, like very intelligent. Apes and monkeys and stuff seem to have some sort of consciousness as well. So yeah, there's definitely some sort of consciousness, you know? So some sort of consciousness, some sort of like, but like obviously humans have the most developed consciousness out of any other animal. You know, we can rationalize, we understand about ourselves. We are the only, you know, animal that believes in God, that can think of abstract ideas that may not exist. So yeah, there's basically some sort of consciousness, I think, even even all, I think all animals have some sort of consciousness and even some rudimentary morality too, right? Like you know what I'm saying? So if you lived with an alcoholic, you know why it's banned. And wine is tasty. It's funny. Yeah, but you know, sometimes it's like throwing out the baby with the bathwater, right? When you ban something, is that the right way to approach the subject? Like, let's just ban all drugs, let's just ban alcohol, let's just ban nudity on TV, let's just ban pornography, let's just ban, well, you know, ban everything, right? And then, like, what type of world do you have where everything is banned and people don't have a choice? Like, it becomes a nanny state where the government tells you, you know, what to watch, what to do, what not to do, what to think. It gets to the point of, like, you know, eventually telling you what to think, what not to think, right? So, yeah, I'm definitely not a fan of, like, alcohol in the sense of, like, I do drink once in a while, but I don't ever, I've never got drunk before. I've never experienced a hangover before, and I hope never to experience such things. So, yeah. Why did converted to Islam become Christian and not atheist? Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. Maybe he wanted to believe in God. Maybe he found some sort of personal connection with Christianity, right? Chugging the beer like a true infidel. Age of Ice. Would you be experiencing two Abdullah Samirs? Or would you cast... So, Age of Ice, I think you will enjoy this book. It's not really a book, but it's a course. It's called, what is it called? Oh, yeah. That's what it's called. Okay. So, check out this, let me open up. Oh, not this one. Netflix Explained Audible. So, I really like this book where he actually asks a lot of, you know, questions about, metaphysics. So if you're interested in consciousness, the soul, you know, things like that, you know, the idea of a mind, what's a mind, what's, you know, all these things, this is a fantastic book slash course. It is 11 hours long, so it's kind of long, but I did definitely enjoyed it, so I highly recommend you check it out if you want to learn about this topic. So yeah, I definitely recommend that. So do that. Okay. Right. Would it be better to promote deism because it's easier for Muslims to leave the religion but then still believe in God? Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I always say like deism is a viable possibility. Maybe God exists. I do mind, I don't mind saying that, and I say that all the time when I'm discussing with people if they're hung up on the idea of God, because many people do leave Islam and still believe in God, right? Marijuana is going to become illegal. Sorry, legal in Canada soon. It's only a coincidence that, you know, a coincidence of history that marijuana is illegal and alcohol is legal. You know, alcohol actually can make you more violent, whereas marijuana can make you more mellow. But marijuana can also make you more like anxious and paranoid. I never tried it, and maybe one day. But yeah, I never tried it. What are other names for God? Don't call it God. Other names for God. The primordial being. Like I said, I don't really believe in God. So, I don't know. Yeah, I follow materialism, Space 5. I don't believe in any spirit. I don't believe in any dualism. I think it's just a physical body. Everything we know about the mind tells us that the mind is connected to the brain. Without the brain, there's no mind. If you get into an accident and you're unconscious, you stop existing. And then when you wake up, you can wake up like 5 years later and you'd be like, what happened? And you'd be like, yeah, you were in a coma. I was in a coma for 5 years? Yeah, for 5 years. But you're like, I just fell asleep in a minute and I woke up and now it's 5 years, it's gone? Yeah. So everything we know about the mind, it's connected to the brain, right? So that's the thing, eh? I do believe. If the cannabis has low CBDs, it can cause paranoia. Okay, thanks, Keith. I don't know too much about it. I don't know anything about Annie Anazsiris. Yes, being deist is cool. Nothing wrong with that. I don't know anything about Rumi's Quran. I don't know anything about Rumi's Quran, sorry. Yeah, well, I guess if you're against alcohol, then maybe live in a Muslim country, because some Muslim countries have it banned. So, Keith is saying, come to Ottawa, I'll get you drunk. People have told me they remember this stuff in comas. That's the first thing I ever heard of, the first time I ever heard of that. People dream in comas. I thought comas, you're completely unconscious, like you're pretty much dead, like other than your body, like body's still beating, your heart's beating. I don't really know. Yeah, memories in surgery is one thing, because in surgery you're not necessarily completely out. You may be partially out, you might be somewhat out, and you get this like, and then yeah, there's a whole thing about near-death experiences, right? So yeah, that some people get this near-death experience stuff as well, which they think, you know, some people will say, well, when they see this tunnel and they see light, and it's interesting that there's a lot of common experiences, just like with nightmares and dreams, there's a lot of common experiences that humans have, and there's different theories for why is it that these people see a tunnel of light and the lives flash before their eyes. And then they'll usually see something related to the culture and religion that they believe in. So if they believe in Jesus, they'll say they saw Jesus. If they believe in Islam, you know, they'll say something about Allah or something, right? Excuse me. But like, it's funny that, you know, this whole thing about the tunnel of light, could it be that when the brain starts to die and starts to lose oxygen, that certain parts, you know, start shutting off before others, and maybe the optical one is one of the last ones to be shut off, and or maybe it gets shut off from the outside towards in or whatever. So, you know, that's the whole thing about near-death experiences. But there's no evidence that there's actually any. There's no evidence that people in near-death experiences can tell anyone something that they experience that's truly real from outside of the subjective experiences. For example, they've tried to do studies where they put like paintings up on the wall above where the patient can see, and then they'll ask the patient after he comes out of the surgery, did he see anything? Because supposedly, you know, they claim they feel like they're hovering above the body and they heard what the doctor was saying and all that. But they can never, like, so far there hasn't been a single case where anyone's actually experienced and described, like, you know, what was happening on the floor above or just like on a shelf above where they could see. So as far as I'm convinced, the near-death experience is just another function of the brain dying, right? Nuhal Nisa is disagreeing with me and saying that that's not the case, but I'd like to see some evidence that there's truly near-death experiences where people actually saw something real. You know, I'm not convinced that there's any sort of you know, seeing anything outside of that. Am I gonna have a debate with Ali Dawa? Did Rob give me an update? Yeah, Rob from Speaker's Corner asked Ali Dawa about why he doesn't want to debate me, and Ali Dawa wasn't interested. He's like, no, I don't wanna, I'm not interested. I don't want to beat him. I don't want to debate him. I don't want to debate him. He just wants attention. I'll do it when he has 100,000 subscribers. So it's not gonna happen. And sadly, almost nobody wants to discuss. You know, I was hoping I could get some Muslim guy to come on here and have another fun discussion with them, but I wasn't able to. So if anybody knows somebody, Muslim guy, a girl, whatever, I mean, Muslim that wants to discuss, I would be so happy. Hey, Thinker. I'd be so happy if you can get them to come on the channel and we can have a dialogue. That one time it happened with Introverted Smiles. They came on Introverted Smiles channel, and then they invited me to the Discord room, the Discord server. So I'm like, yay, I have a connection now with these Muslim dudes. I can ask them for a debate. Next thing you know, I was kicked out, right? So they don't want me in there. So unfortunately, there's no Muslim debate happening. That's too bad. But yeah, if I can find a Muslim guy, I would love to have a discussion with him. Philosophy Cafe, I haven't read anything on religion or spirituality by Ken Wilber. Lots of good books to read now. Neil deGrasse Tyson debunks near-death experiences white tunnel. That's good, right? Yeah. Also, someone else is saying, Ibrahim, that, you know, with near-death experiences, why is it that everybody sees their own religion, not like the one true religion, right? So again, it's like whatever's in their mind, right? So I'm not so convinced about near-death experiences. I think it's just hocus pocus. What's my opinion on the annihilationism view of hell? So I think you mean, you know, the idea that when people die, they sorry, the hell is not eternal, non-eternal hell. So some, some people have tried to read, Ibn Arabi and I think Ibn Taymiyyah. They read the Quran and they come up with this funny way of like understanding that there's no heaven and hell. Sorry, not there's no, what am I saying? That there's no eternal hell, right? I'll just see if I can find some verses, right? Okay. So the funny thing is, well, here's a funny thing. When you read the Quran, like it seems to be like that it's saying that you will be in hell eternally. But the funny thing is, the word abada, khalidina fiha abada. So the word abada, which means also means eternally, is not mentioned, right, for hell. It just says but it says eternally, right? But it doesn't say abada. So majority of Muslims will accept that hell is forever for non-Muslims, but some people will say no, it's not forever because it doesn't say abada, and that's a minority opinion. I'm not too convinced by that, but yeah, I guess it makes more sense because why would God want to punish people eternally for a finite crime, right? It doesn't add up because I just think it doesn't make any sense. I mean, everybody I think feels uncomfortable with the idea of eternal hell, so that's why they came up with this idea of non-eternal hell, because it's just painful to tell people that, hell is eternal, and they're gonna go to hell forever and ever. And how is that just, right? How is it just that hell is eternal? How is it just that God will punish his finite creatures in hell for a crime? Now here, now let's look at this. Is Islam fair, right? If if without Islam, all we have is atheists running amok, committing crimes and let's say killing people and doing things and saying, oh, there's no punishment for me. I can do whatever I want and I'm just gonna kill people and this and that. So Muslims will say, well, yeah, Islam solves that problem. Well, the question is, first of all, do Muslims commit crimes? Yes, they do. Muslims commit crimes. That's the first thing, right? So the fact that Muslims commit crimes right away tells you that, whether you believe in God or not, people will commit crimes. Second thing, if people believe in God and let's say they believe in Islam, what does that mean? If I'm a killer, a murderer, I do all sorts of bad things and I can get away with it and, no one punishes me, but then God is going to punish me, right? So, you can feel better, right? Wrong. If I'm a believer, if I'm a Muslim, I will be punished and then I'll go to heaven. Yay, right? But if I'm a disbeliever, I know about Islam, I reject Islam, and I do those bad things, I'll go to hell forever. So where is the justice in that? How is Islam fair? How is that fair that a child, let's say a child hits the age of puberty, as soon as he hits puberty, he's now responsible to know about Islam. And if he received the message, this puberty, this kid will hit puberty, just like, Muhammad, he killed all of the men and all the boys who had hit puberty from Banu Qurayda, right? So like, because they're considered adults in Islam, right? So how is it that this makes any sense that a God that, how is it just that Islam says non-Muslims will go to hell forever and ever, Muslims will suffer through this life, but then they'll go to heaven. And on top of it, criminals, Muslim criminals will go to heaven eventually, non-Muslim criminals will not go to heaven. So isn't that like a get out of jail card? Isn't that mean that Islam is saying that you can actually get away with murder? Because you are going to get away with it eventually, right? You'll pay some crime, same punishment, you get away with it eventually. Whereas a non-Muslim, they'll go to hell forever. Like, what the heck's that about, right? Doesn't make any sense. If you argue about Islam, never use Ibn Ishaq, only use Sahih Hadith and Quran. Well, Ibn Ishaq and the stories from the Sirah, they're still there, right? I mean, Muslims believe in these stories, right? So I do think we should use these examples, right? If we can, right? Catholicism decided to get rid of purgatory after they felt it didn't really fit with the present day narrative. Yeah. And I think that's what Muslims will try to do as well, right? They'll try to, try to reinterpret things and try to make it seem a little bit nicer than it really is, right? Like, because, it seems quite kind of terrible, right? That people will go to hell forever and ever. It just seems wrong, right? So people now are like, they prefer this opinion. They prefer the opinion that Aisha was 18, not 6 when she got married. I've read about the punishments of the grave, Arif. Yes, I have. You'll be tortured in the grave, and they'll come with hammers and they'll pound you on the head, and the angels this and that. So yeah, it's definitely some terrible stuff. I don't know too much about Baha'ism. I apologize. Age of ice. Okay. Any more questions? Any more questions before I go? This was a good discussion. I hope I covered all of the points about morality, about intelligent design, about heaven and hell. Some good points, some good discussion. I do want to see if I can get some people to come in the live, in the discussion, and like actually chat with me. Either ex-Muslims or Muslims or non-Muslims. It'll be fun to have more conversations. Remember, this Wednesday, there's an event coming, which is going to be all about another ex-Muslim who has a similar story to me. And he basically left Islam after being very religious as well. And this Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, we're going to be discussing. His name is Abdul Hanan, right? And we're going to be discussing with him, right? So come and see the conversation. I think it'll be fantastic. This coming Wednesday at 9 p.m. He's a really interesting fellow. He went through a similar journey to me. He was very religious. He's married to a white girl just like I am. And there's some other similarities too that we'll discuss. Really, really cool. So yeah, for sure, please come and join me for the conversation. And it'll be really good. And so I'm hoping that, we can do this. Do I believe in love? Prove love exists. Love is a feeling in the heart that, it's your blood pressure rises, and your hormones start racing, your pupils get dilated, and so there's definitely a chemical reaction. There's definitely a biological experience to it, and that's why you have some people that are, asexual. Like they don't. There's people that exist that they don't have any sort of desire for intimacy and stuff like that, right? So yeah, love exists. The reason I mentioned that I'm married to a white girl, well, first of all, I don't think it matters what color she is. I just thought that was a cool, interesting point that both of us are married to, Zeberts. They're both Canadians, I think. And it's just a lot of similarities there. It's like kind of wow to meet somebody with that many coincidence, similar things, in your life that you've both gone through, right? So that was cool. That was cool. And yeah, I know color doesn't matter. I don't think in terms of color. Why are people homophobic? Because I don't know. It's a good question. I don't come from that culture of homophobia. So I don't totally understand it, but I'm guessing it comes from, people not liking something that's different, right? I'm guessing that's what it is. It's, people are different and they don't like it and they disgust them, so they're like, oh, I hate you and this and that, right? And they probably think people are choosing to do that, whereas in reality, people are born with sexuality, the way they are, they can't choose that, right? What if you were in heaven and Allah was torturing your child for billions of years? Would you ask Allah to stop? Well, that's a weird thing, right? According to Islam or any religion, you actually end up, sort of, like a zombie in heaven, right? Because people are going to be asking you to give them water in hell, and you'll be like, nope, no water for you. If you're, I guess, family members, you're gonna have nothing to do with your family members after that day. They'll be tortured in hell, and you don't care about them anymore. Both in Islam and Christianity, right? So it's like, basically, it's like you stop caring. You become sort of zombie, right? You become a sort of zombie that you don't really care about the people, that are being punished and tortured, right? Why is Muhammad considered a prophet? Because Yeah, and there's also a religious component of justification for hate, because the religions teach that this is immoral and it's wrong and all that. Abrahamic religion specifically, right? Muhammad is considered a prophet because he claimed to speak to God, and people follow him as a religious leader, so that's why he's considered a prophet, right? Okay. Yeah, that's sad that what happened, the racism that happened in Charlottesville and all that stuff. What did I think of Zeroids and Intramural Smiles chat? Yeah, that live chat that we have, the debate, sort of debate. Like I said, I talked to the guy after Zeroid, his name is Noor, and I asked him, I said, why don't we have another conversation? And he's like, no, I just want to talk to you one-on-one. I don't care about, all this online stuff and having a discussion. I said, well, other people can actually, learn from the discussion. Maybe someone will be convinced by you. He's like, no, I don't care if anyone's convinced. I just want to discuss with you only. I don't want to do it online and, this and that. So he's like, oh, it's very toxic and, people leave all these comments. I said, yeah, but buddy, like, people always leave crappy comments online. Like, why does that bother you? Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't you want to give dawah and, convince the audience that Islam is true, right? And he wasn't interested, right? And I think we managed to get people on it because Introverted Smiles managed to convince them, but I still haven't found a way to convince people. So if you know anyone that wants to have a dialogue, I would really like to have a dialogue with them. Yeah, and Max is saying Ibn Ishaq doesn't have an isnad. Like, the whole isnad thing, I don't know if it really is. Really, it's just a tall tale to make people believe in stuff that's not true. Like, why does having an isnad make something true necessarily? If I told you that, let's say Aisha reported that Muhammad said, sorry, like, the cousin of Aisha reported from Aisha that Muhammad said so and so and so, does that make it true suddenly? That because the cousin of Aisha, or, the student of Aisha, or Abu Huraira heard from this guy, we heard from Omar, we heard from Abu Bakr, we heard from this guy, and the longer the chain, the worse, right? And it's like, oh, well, because you have a chain, and we know that, Aisha lived at the same time as Muhammad, and we know that her student, this student lived at the same time as Aisha, and therefore there's a chain, therefore it's true. Like, say what? Like, the only thing you can say about the isnad is it's better than nothing, but it's still terrible. It doesn't prove anything, right? And that's why you have so many hadith in Bukhari completely fabricated. They make no sense. And like the one about the hadith, the athar, technically a saying of the companions, that the monkeys were stoning each other. Like, that's just a silly thing, right? And there's lots of examples like that, right? So yeah, there's no isnad, there's no chain of narration for Ibn Hisham, but it's a very early source, right? So that's the thing, right? A very early source of Islamic stories, right? So, yeah, at the time of Muhammad, there was probably a couple hundred other people who said they talked to God, but no one listened. Well, I guess those other people weren't as successful in, like, creating a band of people to follow them and then starting an offensive war against the enemies and capturing land. And, sometimes these religions become successful because of freak of history, right? A nature, because the way history is, not necessarily because they were right or wrong, right? So that's just the way it is. Hey, viral video watcher, thanks for the compliment, man, from Algeria. Nice to have you on here. Okay, so it's late now and I'm going to get to bed. And Chowdhury is saying, why don't we have hadith from Muhammad's time? We do, right? Supposedly. But it's like, memorized and narrated and copied and, I don't know, like 200 years later, right? So, Ibrahim's gonna die from sleep deprivation. Ibrahim, where are you? It's 4 o'clock. Are you in UK as well? Yeah, thanks everyone. Noor Anissa, are you the same person I spoke to on Facebook? I think I know who you are now. You believe everything is sacred, the universe is sacred. I think I know you. You're in that group, right? Muslims for Progressive Values? Is that, I believe I spoke to you once on Facebook. Is that you? Is the author of Conversations with God a modern prophet? I don't know. Oh, Yeshua coming is back to talk about 666 and Allah in Greek. and how this similar. Arif, yeah, fear of hell. Just give it time, my friend. Give it time. Keep reading books. Keep studying about science and nature. You'll see there's no day of judgment coming. You know, once you realize that, you know that it's just a lie. You know, from 2,000 years ago, this whole lie started about day of judgment. There's no day of judgment coming. It's all a lie. It's all a scam. So you know, you don't need to worry about hell. But you know, if there was a God and he asked me, why didn't you worship me? I'll say I tried my best. I looked for you. I looked everywhere, and all I found was these man-made books full of mistakes. So why would I follow that? Like, didn't you give me a brain? Didn't you give me a thinking? Didn't you tell me that, you know? I mean, isn't there like false prophets as well? And I had to determine, right, who's false and who's true. So don't worry about hell. You know, it's a false idea that's made to make you scared. You'll get over it if you just keep studying, I think. Maybe, you know, one of my friends had issues with this as well, and he went for a therapy, and he was able to get some help with the therapy, and that actually helped him. So try that. You should be more scared of a lack of hereafter. Yeah, make the most of your life anyways, whether there's hereafter or no hereafter, right? Make the most of your life. Exodus is saying, I expect God to give Abdullah a well done. According to the Islamic God, I'm like the worst of the worst person, and I'm going to like hell forever and ever and ever. And everyone in my family who I misguide, including my wife and kids, if I convince them, they're going to hell forever as well. Like, it's such a demonic God that actually think, you know, says that you would go to hell just because you reject. Because it's not true. It's just made up. Like, let's be honest. This religion's made up. It's not true, right? Lack of hereafter is more scary. Yeah, some people want there to be eternal life. I think that's a human nature that we all want to live together. Do serial killers deserve to get the punishment of hell? I actually don't think so. Because I believe serial killers are. I don't think that they're doing what they're doing because of free. I don't believe in free will. I think that people are, you know, they're acting according to the way their brains are, their life experiences are. A lot of these serial killers were sexually molested, abused, raped, multiple gang raped. Like, they grew up with, you know, the worst experiences while they were still children. Some of them were like starved to death or beaten by their parents, and they have multiple personalities. And why would they go to hell? Why should they go to hell? Right? Like, they need to be fixed. They need love. They need the brain to be like, you know, having an overhaul, right? Like, how can you blame people like that, right? And I don't know if everyone's like that, but does Hitler deserve hell? I just explained in general, right? Like, I don't think there's any such thing as free will. So if Hitler was some crazy maniac that didn't know what he was doing, I think he's just like a robot, like operating under some sort of brain machinery and life experiences. Like, you know, if anyone deserves hell, wouldn't it be the person that made Hitler into what he is? Why is it that the drones, the little robots that God made, are the ones, the little toy soldiers are the ones that are held responsible? Shouldn't the one that made the toy soldiers be responsible? Right? So yeah, I don't know, man. I don't believe in free will. I don't believe in free will. I don't think that people do things 'cause they're mean. I think people do things 'cause they believe it'll help them in whatever way, right? So yeah, Buddhism seems kind of cool. I do think that there's some good things in it. Why do people do acts of pedophilia? There was an article about this. Let me see if I can find it. Hold on, I recently got it. Hold on one second. Ah, here we go. I found it. Found it. So I think that there's some science behind this, that people are born. I know it sounds weird, but there's some. They believe that now. They believe that people are born with some sort of brain mix-up, right, in the brains. And that 1 to 5% of men are pedophiles, and it's not like something they can control, right? Like, in the sense of like, As long as they don't hurt anybody, it's fine. As long as they don't act upon it, because children are innocent and they cannot give consent. So I clearly believe no pedophile should act on his pedophilia. That would be wrong, and he would have to go to jail because children cannot consent. But there is an issue that people are born this way, and I do believe, like I said, I believe in this. I think this is true. As you know, obscene as it sounds to some people, I'm not saying it's we should allow them to do that, right? Of course not. But yeah, that's your mom came into your Zoom when you're talking about pedophiles. I hope not. That was like that'd be terrible. I'm like, what are you watching? What kind of freak show are you watching on YouTube? Wait, what? How old are you? How old are you? Wait, what? Yeah, that's what it says. 1 to 5% of men are the pedophiles. Yeah, so 1 in 20. That's what they're saying, right? But anyways, yeah, Keith is saying that might not be true anymore. The number may have changed, right? Okay, so I think this has gone on for a long time, so it's better to. Yeah, so anyways, thanks everyone. It was a great video, I mean, a great conversation. Late at night, I apologize for doing it at a time that some people are just waking up and going to work, and you know, people actually want to get on with their days. Some people are up late in, you know, Eastern time zone where I am, or some of the other time zones that are like still early, like Pacific time zone. Cheers to everyone. I read Bukhari cover to cover, Max is asking, the English translation, the summarized version of Bukhari. So not the one that's like 9 volumes or whatever, but basically the summarized one, right? So there's basically two versions of it, right? There's this gigantic version that's like, you know, 9 volumes, not that one. But I read the one that's like, I don't know, 1,000 pages or 600 pages or whatever. That's the one I read. So that one, you know, looks like this. That's the one I read. I don't know how many pages it is, like 600 pages, 1,000 pages or something. So yeah, I read that cover to cover when I first converted. And I was very confused because there's a lot of things in it that are like really weird. And I asked my friends about them, and no one really had an explanation, but I just let it go. I didn't really bother. Yeah, how can you claim to memorize 600,000 hadith? How is that even possible, right? Who knows, man? Who knows? That's not huge. Hold on. Let me show you the huge one. The non-summarized one, which is like, oh yeah, you're saying the 9 volume one is huge. Yeah, that's true. The 9 volume one is huge. It's like, it's massive. But the funny thing is, it's 9 volumes because it's mostly like repeated hadith over and over. It's like, you know, like a tiny little difference in the hadith between, you know, like one hadith and the other has like 4 word differences. So it's repeated over and over and over again. And Zarif Hussein is saying, let us end the stream by invoking the great spaghetti monster, Surah Fatiha, Ya Spaghetti Monster. In your name, we ask you to bless us with lots of noodles, lots of holy noodles raining upon us every day. Oh, Spaghetti Monster, give us lots of noodles in paradise and lots of noodles in this life, and forever guide us by reason and goodness. On this note, I will end in the name of Spaghetti Monster Ramen. Amen. All the best to my fellow friends in humanity, reason, skepticism, atheism, or even belief. If you believe, my fellow human brothers and sisters, I wish you well for a better world, you know, for all of us. Take care. Bye bye.